Hello and welcome to another edition of Sounds Like Comics, the podcast based out of Perth, Western Australia. I'm joined by Jay Ryan. Welcome.
Thank you.
You want to tell us a little bit about yourself and where we are?
I work at Comic Zone in Perth, from where we're currently recording. I've been into comics for as long as I can remember.
DC or Marvel? Big question.
I must admit, I grew up on Marvel, and I do like them both for different reasons. But I do tend to prefer Marvel.
I prefer personally DC, and DC is why we're here today. So this is the third episode of Sounds Like Comics, and today the focus will be Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. We will be discussing mainly the pilot episode, but we will be touching on the series as a whole. That's the plan. We may end up getting further beyond the pilot than what we've got planned at this stage. But to begin with, we're going to discuss the pilot.
Fresh in my mind, watched it last night.
And I watched it a couple of nights ago. And for me, I mean, it's very 90s.
It is very 90s, yes.
But it's still so good.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great intro to Superman as well. Despite the fact you don't really get him as Superman till at the very end, it's all the character work necessary to establish a Superman TV series.
I mean, this is a show about Lois and Clark. It's there in the title. For the most part, like from the pilot included, Superman, it's almost as if he's a guest star in the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you're unfamiliar, I think if you're listening, you're very familiar with the show. You've watched it at some point, maybe watched it growing up with your family. Maybe you came to it late. Lois and Clark was a fresh look at Superman, focusing on the relationship of its two leads while letting Superman deal with villain of the week. And it was gangsters, mad scientists. It's a very golden age Superman. It's a mixture of mystery, banter, and a lightheartedness, which made the show a classic. Well, I'd say it was a classic.
Yeah, and I think, especially given the limitations of the time, especially for television specifically, it was the best way to make sure that you didn't tie up your entire budget on the special effects, but people didn't feel shortchanged.
I mean, we will get to some of our favorite special effects, but you can't beat Dean Cain crouching down, throwing his cape over the camera lens and making a swooshing noise. I mean, he didn't do that personally. That was added afterwards, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, think back to George Reeves. He used a springboard, didn't he, when he'd take flight?
He did, and apparently he used to jump into the shots as well when he landed.
So Dean Cain jumped over, and he jumped into.
Yeah.
What I really like, so with Lois and Clark, again, we'll start with the pilot. Knowing that the audience has some sort of knowledge of the characters, it jumps straight into Clark Kent moving to Metropolis. You don't actually get to see him as a kid growing up. We got that in the Chris Reeve movies. And here, it's a full-grown Clark Kent steps off the bus outside the Daily Planet.
Yeah, and the funny thing, and it tells you something that is called Lois and Clark, New Adventures of Superman, because the show starts with Lois. And
as a man.
Lois
as a man.
Yeah, we're dressed in with a beard and some rags underneath her clothes to help hide her figure. But I don't think it's just the proliferation of Clark and Lois doesn't sound or roll off as well as Lois and Clark. But she is already the established character when the show opens. She's already made a name, and Clark is coming into that relationship with her and their newspaper audience.
So we get to see Clark for the first time, steps off the bus, disaster strikes. A bus driver on a different bus, heart attack, bus is out of control. Was it then the brakes aren't working?
The brakes seem to be malfunctioning.
That's right, no heart
barreling
attack.
Towards an intersection. The people have already started to walk, busy in the city, not even bothered to check both ways.
But when you're saying people, elderly, couple of nuns, children.
Yeah, all of the most endangered, like you should feel, oh no, not the children, not the nuns. It's all of the cliches are taken care of.
What starts here is what we get throughout the pilot. And you said that we get Superman at the end. And as spoken by Clark Kent himself in a later season. Clark is who he is. Superman is what he can do. What I love about Lois and Clark, one of the many things I love about it, even when he's Clark Kent, is very much Superman. So you get to see him, the people around him don't necessarily see, but when he stops the bus and there's a handprint in the steel frame on the front, and one woman did notice, and then this is where the music starts. I love the music. The score by Jay Grushka, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, is just on point. It's perfect. I mean, the idea is, how could you follow John Williams, the classic Superman theme? What they do here is so different. And maybe it's the age that I came to the show, but I love it so much. And that, not just the main theme, that twinkling sound.
Yeah.
More so in the pilot, whenever he's using his powers, there's that little twinkle music.
Yeah, like you're witnessing magic.
And perfect. That's exactly what it's like.
And with the theme as well, there are hints to the classic John Williams theme, but much like at the same era, the Next Generation theme was like a modernized evolution of what the classic Star Trek theme was. I think they managed to do the exact same thing here with the Superman theme, and it always sticks into my mind.
So we get the opening, Clark is in Metropolis. An overall guide, again, if you haven't seen Lois and Clark, the main pilot, Clark gets a job at the Daily Planet. He joins Lois in investigating a space shuttle sabotage, which he must eventually stop as Superman. Maybe I should have put that in a bit earlier in the podcast, but that's essentially, that's the plot for the pilot. I guess we'll go through and just talk about some of our favorite scenes. Like, is there anything in particular? I mean, we're talking about the use of his powers.
I have to say, the stopping the bus is, for me, the most iconic shot and the use of his abilities.
When he's not in costume.
When he's not in costume, because it's pure reaction, the handprint pressed into the steel of the bus, the looking around and hoping, oh, I hope no one saw me do that, and then quickly scurrying off before anyone has a chance to turn around and notice what's just happened. It's, for me, perfect.
I really like it. It is great. But there's a scene when he's flying back to Smallville for the first time. He's in the alleyway and he's about to take off, and then he notices an homeless man. And then you get the magic twinkle music again, and he's already like taken flight to the point where he's maybe like, what, 5-6 foot?
Yeah.
You know, so far off the ground. And then he pretends to walk through the air and he gives the guy the money, and then he flies up. And one of my favorite things from Lois and Clark is just the shot of Clark Kent in his Daily Planet suit just flying through the air with that awesome soundtrack behind him.
Yeah.
And that's used in the opening credits, which we don't get in the pilot. It's just black screen, the S, and that's your opening credits.
Yeah, very much a cold open, almost a movie open, which I remember at the time, it was a movie-length premiere. It was done as you would expect for the big week's movie that week.
And back in 93, I thought it was a new Superman movie. And then I got to the end, next week on Lois and Clark, my little head nearly exploded. And then I was so looking forward to the following Saturday.
Yeah, it's great. Here in Australia, I can't remember what network it was on, but I do remember it became the go-to, kicking my parents out of the living room. I have to put on Lois and Clark. It's Tuesday.
I'm jumping towards the end, just because we're talking about, you know, iconic shots. And this is when he's in costume.
Yeah.
When you've got Perry White, and after Superman has launched the shuttle, you know, there's nothing wrong with this space station or this rocket. You just need to get there, and it gives him a boost. I love it. Well, that's after he's eaten the bomb and belches.
Yeah.
Superman belches in this.
Very 90s shot for that one.
But you get the awesome shot of the Daily Planet newsroom. And again, Perry White is saying that it's some kind of hoax. And then the big windows open and Superman flies in holding Lois. That's your shot. For me, that's the iconic takeaway shot from this pilot.
Yeah, and I have to say, some of the effect shots when he was flying and it was purely an effect shot are very typical of the time. They weren't really up to scratch. But any of the shots where it's Dean Cain foreground, I'm guessing it was wire work, are all phenomenal.
He did a lot of wire work in this.
And they stand up to today's standard for flying on a TV budget as well. even a movie budget, like that classic fly-in to the newsroom, it reminds me of the establishing shot for Christopher Reeve taking off from the Fortress of Solitude from the original film. But also, it really puts him in the environment, because it was not just an effect shot, it was a practical effect shot.
Yeah, and Lois Lane, Terry Hatcher, she was also on wires for that scene as well. Like, a lot of it was on Dean Cain to actually hold her, but just in case.
Yeah.
She was on wires also.
That looks phenomenal. And when he's flying the space shuttle up as well, and it's just, you're just seeing him hold like the booster and the cape flowing in space, also a brilliant shot as well.
And I always remember like how much product he'd have in his hair, you know, how much gel he'd have in there. Like, his hair was really slapped down. But then when I was watching some of the behind the scenes, like making ofs, they're like, to get the action from the cape and for it to move the way that it does, they've got a massive fan on him.
Which explains...
So without the gel, his hair would be all over the place and wouldn't have the same heroic, you know, visual that we get in the series.
Yeah, and that's the big difference between his Superman and his Clark Kent, is just the hair. One with an enormous amount of product, and then his Clark Kent, which is a standard amount of product.
But if you look at, you know, strictly in the pilot, where the Superman costume, and I guess we'll get to it later, is different. Well, it changes quite a lot. We're talking about, you know, previously the cape. We see quite a few capes. But his hair's quite long. Dean Cain has longish hair.
It is a very 90s appropriate Superman. It is the exact length and style as you would have seen in the Dan Jurgens run of comics of the same era. The 90s mullet.
But it works for the pilot. And the fact that, you know, the next episode, again, the costume looks different, the hair's different. Because I know quite a bit of time elapsed between the two. Because you were talking about how it's almost like a movie, the pilot. Well, I guess when they made it, they put quite a bit of money into it. You can tell that with, you know, with the visuals. But I guess they were kind of hedging their bets. They shot this in widescreen. I've watched this on Blu-ray, sorry, on DVD, and it is just, it's your standard TV box definition.
Yeah.
But there must be a widescreen version out there, because the reason why they shot it that way is if the series didn't get picked up, which they didn't know at the time of the pilot, they were going to sell it to Europe as a theatrical release.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that until yesterday. Yeah, so there must be a widescreen version, if not only the pilot. Because it does feel like a movie.
I imagine that they would have shot this as well in the traditional sense of a pilot, where you only got your pilot, and then based on having shown that to the network, then you would have been picked up. And for the actors themselves and everything else, there would have been a few weeks, even a few months elapsed between the two, the filming of the pilot and then the filming of the first episode for the rest of the series.
So we're talking about the effects, and we could probably spend a little bit more time on that. So we're talking Clark's apartment.
Yes.
Whenever they do, more so in the pilot, when there's a big special effect, like, you do notice that the quality of the film is different. It's a bit grainier. It's a bit more, the colour saturation is not quite the same.
Yeah.
And that really happens in Clark's apartment.
Are you talking about the scene where he fixes the light bulb?
And that's amazing. So he's in his apartment, he's laying in bed, and the light bulb on the ceiling is flickering. So again, we get the twinkle magic. I like the magic thing you've added there. The magic sound effect, and Clark, he just slowly just floats up to the ceiling, tinkers around with the light bulb, and it stops flickering, and then he flies back down.
Yeah.
That wasn't wires. He was on a board, and he got lifted up.
Oh, wow.
That's how they did that. That's why he's really flat. So when I watch it, knowing that he's on a board, and when I watch it now, he's really laying flat on there. But then they do the thing where they built his apartment. That apartment, they built it. So do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, this is a shot I do know about specifically for the pilot. And that is in the story. It's a hotel room, I think later on in the pilot, the next time you see him, it's a different apartment, because he's moved from a hotel room to a temporary apartment.
That's right. Yeah, it's a hotel room. Yeah.
Because it's got the easiest way to tell the difference is there's a desk in front of his bed for the original shot. And the next time around, that desk is gone and there are cupboards against the wall. But for that shot, after he floats up and gets back down, he stands up off the bed and, kind of bored, having nothing to do, decides to stroll up the wall and then lean against the ceiling as if the ceiling itself was a wall.
And when watching this pilot, I'd read a lot of Superman. Never seen that. I mean, we know he's not really walking up the wall. He's bored and he's flying, but he's just like he was in the alleyways making out that he's walking. But do you know how they actually did that?
Yeah, they had built the entire set for that room, and for that shot, it was on a gimbal, and the set itself rotated, so what was the floor became what was the wall became the floor, which allowed him to walk up the side.
Perfect. So that's Dean Cain, the stunt coordinators on the side, just being on point. And as he's walking, I could never work out as a kid how they did that. Because it always, when he actually walks from one side, from one level to the next, it's kind of awkward looking. So I kind of figured, even though it was 93, that it was computer generated. Like they somehow...
Yeah, they manipulated the shot, especially with this strange lean back as he shifts his balance.
It's almost like Michael Jackson, Smooth Criminal, when he leans all the way back. It's like it just looks a bit unnatural. But just the wires, the manipulation of the room, it's part of the magic of this show. Like, it looks like he's flying because he's hanging there.
Yeah.
I mean, this scene's like where he's, you know, when he flies and he goes to Smallville, and he lands, that's clearly not him on wires.
Yeah.
That's computer generated. But there's so much charm to the effects. So the tone, it's very much an action show second and a romantic comedy first. I've read it described as moonlighting with capes.
I think that's really accurate. I think it's, especially given the fact that most of the drama for the series, and for the pilot especially, all comes not from Superman and the villain of the week. It comes from whatever story he and Lois are investigating for the newspaper that week. And as you said, it's not until in the main of the series, seeing something happen as a reporter, Superman is forced to step in. But for the pilot, Lois is steaming straight ahead and he's stuck there thinking, what do I do? I can't use my abilities to assist us in this, except for the odd, like, oh, I'll use the X-ray vision here or something a lot more subtle that isn't going to draw attention.
But it definitely, as a show, just it did not take itself too seriously. If you're going to make a Superman TV series today, like I know we've got Supergirl, which does star or guest star Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher, fingers crossed they share a scene together. I really do hope that happens eventually. But back then, like, dressing up a comic book show as a romantic comedy, I guess, was one way of getting a comic book show on air. Because what else was there? Like, there wasn't a lot at all.
Yeah, slightly before this, they had done the Flash TV series, which only lasted a season because of the pure cost. It was, at the time, $1 million per episode. I mean, that's more expensive than Game of Thrones is for a season now. And that's, I think, the only way they could have gotten this on TV, especially because flying shots are far more expensive than speed shots, was to work it more as a romantic comedy, which even the CW shows we have for DC now owe, I think, a lot to their structure from Lois and Clark. I mean, it's still mainly them out of costume, and then every now and then they all jump into costume for, you know, the big shots for the week. You don't, on the modern shows, see as much of their actual day-to-day jobs. I mean, Flash, especially this season.
Oh, he hardly goes to work.
Yeah, I'm like, how's he even employed? How has he not been fired?
His job is stopping Savitar.
Yeah, whereas on this, they are reporters first. And as you said, Superman is pretty much a guest star in his own, in their show.
I mean, we've spoken about Lois, we've spoken about Clark, but the chemistry between the two actors, I think you'd struggle to beat it. Like, we're talking about the, you know, the modern CW shows, and there's good performances in there. But I think the chemistry between Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher, it's just so real.
It is. And it's funny, with Dean Cain's portrayal of Clark Kent, whilst I was rewatching this, I think his Clark Kent's fantastic. Like you said, the not changing his voice or even much of his demeanor to be Superman, he brought, not in the pilot anyway, but from the episodes following it, he does seem more confident as Superman. But there's a cheekiness to his Clark that they would probably wouldn't use now. He's still very much a well-raised Kansas guy in a big city, but he's got the confidence as Clark Kent to throw a little jokes, like when Lois says, "I'm on top always, you come behind me," and his immediate joke is, like to be on top.
Yeah, he isn't behind her, he's at the bottom, that's right.
Yeah, he's not, Jake, you like to be on top, I get it.
But yeah, I listened to an interview with Dean Cain. He was talking about, you know, what he based his Superman and based his Clark Kent on. Because you're right, his Clark Kent, it's very different, especially to the Christopher Reeve. Like, it couldn't be any different. This is probably the coolest Clark Kent we've seen.
Yeah.
Henry Cavill isn't this cool. Tom Welling wasn't this cool.
No, he's... And it's with everyone. There's none of that aw shucksness.
No, none of that. But on with Dean Cain, he based his Superman on Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
He based his Clark Kent on George Reeves.
Ah.
Which I really like. You know, to Clark Kent from the 50s.
Yeah.
Which was very different. You know, he could stand up for himself.
Yeah.
He wasn't the Clark Kent that we got to see Chris Reeve portray, which, you know, we both love, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that actually answers one of my thoughts I had, especially on the closing of the pilot, but it became the style of which they signed off all of the episodes. There was a very George Reeves, you know better, Lois, like a little, almost a wink to the camera without being quite that on the nose.
And being a romantic comedy, they could do that.
Exactly.
The supporting characters, and I'm sure we've got standouts. If we want to start with Lane Smith, Elvis-loving Perry White.
And he is my favorite of all the support characters. He's definitely a strong, what you'd expect for back when newspapers mattered, a strong
Sorry, general... you still work in publishing.
At least in the
As we record from a comic book shop.
Print, in the traditional print newspaper anyway. Yeah. Rather than the 24 news cycle we have now, but that general, he controls the newsroom. There's experience and power behind his words. Even when they originally, for the pilot, bring the story and what they think is enough proof to go forward with the story, he's like, that's fine, but I still need hard facts. You've given me great circumstantial facts. I need something to be able to put the reputation of the paper on for something a lot more physical. And he has so much charm as well. Not just is he hard, but there's a little subtlety of humor, but he's perfect. Maybe it's the southern charm of the actor, but he is.
And I was going to speak to that. I think tailoring the character to the actor worked, because until Lane Smith, Perry White was all great Caesar's ghost. And we ended with great shades of Elvis. As you say, the actor is from the South. He has the accent, is an Elvis fan.
Yeah.
And at one point, I can't remember which season it was, he actually dresses up and sings as Elvis.
It is season one. It is episode 10, where the pheromones influence everyone except for Superman.
So a great Perry White, a great Clark Kent, Superman, and Lois Lane. What a role so far.
Yeah, and with Terry Hatcher as well, she really nailed Lois.
My favourite Lois Lane.
Mine as well.
Of any adaption.
Because she's strong without being off-putting. She does show her humanity and her emotional side. Like, it is definitely behind a veil. And when you peek behind, you get to see the femininity of the character, but it's also spot on for a woman trying to make her name as a professional, especially of the era as well. And she also is gorgeous.
Which doesn't hurt.
Not at all.
Jimmy Olsen. So we start with one actor, we end with another. So Michael Landis.
Yes.
Season one. And apparently one of the reasons why they recast him was the audience felt he looked too similar to Dean Cain. They had black hair.
Yes.
Other than that, oh, and the male.
They're both
male.
Other
than that, I was never confused, but I thought it was great. I really did like Landis in the role. But then season two, three, and four, Justin Whalen, who was a more youthful Jimmy Olsen, who I think was a good addition. I liked Landis, but I really liked Whalen.
Yeah, and I remember as a kid, and even rewatching it a few years ago, resenting Justin Whalen initially.
Wow.
Because we'd had a first season with Landis, I thought he was great, and then you bring in this other actor playing the exact same character, and they didn't even really change his character, just small approaches, which were probably acting choices by the different actors. That being said, the looking like Dean Cain, I don't agree with. That being said, for Jimmy Olsen specifically, Whalen definitely has the youth that Landis seemed to be missing. Landis was almost the same age as both Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher, whereas when they brought in Whalen, he was quite a few years younger, which helps sell the Jimmy Olsen character.
I agree with that. But what's interesting about bringing in Whalen is behind the scenes, there was also a lot of changes. Deborah Joy Levine, or Levine, so she was brought on and she developed Lois and Clark. She was the one that, you know, whether it was, I think ABC was making the show, ABC Warner Brothers. They wanted a Superman TV series. She didn't have a background with comics. Her brother was an avid comic reader. The two of them got together and they developed the first season, which I will say is my favorite. I know the most popular season, especially going by the ratings, was season three.
Yeah.
But I love season one. I think it is brilliant. But a lot of people that was working and developing that first season were taken off. And season two, it became, well, moving forward, it became less of a romantic comedy and more action, and they increased Superman's screen time.
Yeah, drastically, almost.
But then they brought it back, so it became more like a romantic comedy again. When you get in, you know, when they're getting married, season four. But the pilot. Let's go back to the pilot. And just, you know, talking about, we can talk about the other supporting characters because they are so prominent in the pilot. Ma and Pa Kent.
I always love Ma and Pa Kent. I think they're fantastic. I love the modernization of Ma specifically. She's given up whatever work it is that I presume was the farm to become an artist.
Obscure or abstract.
Yeah. Which it really helps modernize her in the conflict as well with Jonathan, who's still very much a traditional, one of those good old boys, which keeps that Kansas grounding that the entire family is supposed to have. But they are phenomenal. They have a genuine warmth to Clark. They have all the, you know, the support necessary. But also, the mother being a little bit interfering with, like, oh, Lois, oh, what's going on? Oh, you should pursue that. Which all mothers have to a degree. I think they're brilliant.
And that often led to her getting some of the biggest laughs. Because, like I say, she did bring more of the comedy, and then more of the heart was Jonathan. My favourite Ma and Pa Kent of any adaption. I think what I found going back and revisiting the pilot is that going by adaptions, my favourite versions of most of these characters are coming from this show.
Yeah. Like, I did love what they did for Smallville with Annette O'Toole and, was it
John Schneider?
Who was a fantastic Pa Kent. But they were great versions for a younger Superman. For traditional Superman, I still prefer the Lois and Clark Kent, the Ma and Pa, because I guess it's what I was exposed to, even knowing in the comics that Pa had died early. This made me think, wow, they could have had so many more stories in the comics if they had left Pa alive.
My favorite stories of Superman, his parents, his Earth parents, are still alive. And we get that all four seasons of Lois and Clark. In Superman the movie, you know, his dad dies, his mum's elderly. And for the most part in the comics, I mean, wasn't it John Byrne when he did the Man of Steel miniseries or ongoing and he brought his parents back? Is that when that happened?
Yeah, and it was...
I think a lot of what you're getting in Lois and Clark, more so the first season, comes from John Byrne.
Yeah, and I remember that they kept Pa alive mainly because of Lois and Clark, the TV show. When it started in 93, in the comics, they were planning on doing the marriage of Lois and Clark. But because of the series starting to become a success, they had to push that back. And that's where we got the death of Superman. And now I'm just remembering the issue of this comics when Pa seems to have a stroke to try and get his spirit to Clark to bring him back.
I remember that. That had the green cover, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
Yes, I remember that.
But yeah, and of the many changes that John Byrne made, that is probably second only to making Lex Luthor more of a businessman rather than evil scientist.
You brought him up. We're going to have to discuss him. I mean, we can start with Luthor staring out a cobra before chomping on a cigar. I mean, this is a great Lex Luthor, and he's not bald. He's got a full head of hair, which I didn't understand when I was younger. Like, why has he got hair?
Nice, thick, curly hair.
He woos Lois. They're going to get married, and it leads Superman to fly to the Antarctic and scream, and, you know, there's destruction, there's ice slides.
Yeah.
Ice slides, is that the right word? Avalanche.
Ice fall.
Avalanche. That's the correct term for ice. There's avalanches caused by Superman screaming. But yeah, this is a very smooth Lex Luthor.
Incredibly smooth. Like, he owns the room when he moves in. He's of immense power, a man of charisma. And I like the lines from the pilot when Lois is desperately trying to get a one-on-one interview and asks him what it is he pursues in life. And his response is pleasure, to which she's like, I would have thought power. And his counter is, no, power is merely a means to an end. And John Shay's Lex is that perfectly. It is intelligent, incredibly smooth, knows what he wants, well-cultured. Like, his establishing shot going into the ball of the pilot, he's greeting so many different powerful people who have all been there waiting for him specifically. And depending on the culture or their position, he addresses them each correctly and flawlessly.
He is a great Lex.
He is.
And a favorite line of mine in there, and it leads to Superman also having a great line later on, is when he makes a point, he likes how high up his tower is. Like, in his building, being on the top floor, he likes that if anybody in Metropolis need to see him, they need to look up. And that's something this Lex likes. He likes being looked up to. And then later on, when we do get Superman, and he's, you know, he calls Lex out on what happened to the space shuttle, and he's flying above, and he's like, if you ever need to get a hold of me or see me, just look up. And then the look on Lex's face, and it's like, the game is afoot.
Yeah.
It's on.
And that also touches on the greatness of how Clark figures out Lex is dirty, is when he's one-on-one while Lois is snooping and is out of the room, Lex approaches him with a knife and it explains where the knife's origin from. It's Alexander the Great's blade. And he says his strategy was to always attack from higher ground. And it's that line repeated by the scientist that was sabotaging the space program for Lex. When she says it to Clark, you see the sudden recognition in his face of figuring out, like, you're working for Lex. No one else was in the room when he said it. No one else made the connection, but Clark Kent did.
Well done. I did not make that connection until right now. This is my favourite pilot of all time. I watched it just a couple of days ago. For how many times? I don't know. Wow. And yeah. I'm sure there's some of you listening that maybe didn't know that either.
Yeah, and that's why I made my notes. I was like, wow, that is great writing.
And we've already spoken to the intelligence of Lois, but yeah, this is a clever Clark Kent.
It is, and it's the things like knowing he needed to figure out a way to use his abilities, because the two times you see him make saves in the pilot, both times someone clearly sees him do something fantastical.
The guy in the manhole, and he lifts him up and he's got a bit of soot on his face.
Yeah. And then everyone just, he's like, oh my God, Clark, you're a mess. And he's saying, that's the guy who saved me. And Clark's response is, oh, he's delusional. And then everyone's response is like, ah, of course he is. You couldn't be here and have just saved the man.
So let's talk about the origin of a costume. Ordinarily, when I'm watching a origin story, whether it's TV, movie, I don't need an origin for everything. Like X-Men Apocalypse, it gave us an origin for a Ball Xavier. We don't always need an origin, but the origin for the suit, and it involves Mark Kent and Bonnie Tyler working in perfect harmony. The montage of Mark Kent making the suit for him. I love the fact that she makes the suit.
So do I, because it reminds me of the comics as well. I think it might have been the Geoff Johns run, specifically talking about where'd you get the suit? And he's like, oh, my mother made it for me. It seems, of course, that's where he got it.
And speaking to the comics of Geoff Johns, obviously that happened after Lois and Clark. So Johns does like to do that. He likes to reach back something that worked previously and that people are a fan of and then use it in modern times.
Yeah, and with this, it is a very 80s montage, especially for a show of 93.
And he's trying on loads of different costumes. And at one point, he's got a baseball cap with horns. I mean, that's not going to work. I mean, some of these are really silly. And again, the show not taking itself too seriously. It is a comedy after all. You can buy it. If this was happening in Man of Steel, maybe people wouldn't have gone for it.
Yeah.
At one point, he's wearing a red costume that looks like Daredevil. Then he's wearing what looks like a Captain America costume, but instead of the white and red, it's red and yellow.
And that, this is one of my things. These days, they would have found something really cool and intelligent, like an Easter egg during this big montage of maybe he's in, and I thought there was he was in at one point an all green costume with a yellow circle, and I'm like, and he's wearing the eye band, and I'm like, oh, you're so close
to being a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. Is that what you're gonna say?
I was actually thinking Green Lantern.
Oh, I mean, that makes more sense. But when you were describing it then, I was thinking it looks like it's Leonardo.
Which was massive at the time. And I'm sure that was their original intention. But I feel if this was a show that, if they would have filmed this pilot today, some of those, or at least two of those costumes, would have been homages to other DC characters. Like, there was no Flash montage. There was no Green Lantern. There was no Batman, or even like a Zorro or something like that.
But this is a self-contained series. Like, you don't see other DC characters, although in season 4, there's when Lois, something happens, she's behind bars, and Superman swoops in, and somebody, oh, it's the Caped Crusader. And then Superman makes, sorry, it's been a while since I've seen it, but he makes reference, that's the other guy, or that's the guy in Gotham. But there's a mention to a wider DCU, and in that moment, I was so excited. It didn't go anywhere because we didn't get a season 5.
No.
But other than that, they don't really mention anything else.
No. But with the second last costume, like I said, the almost Captain America, that didn't even click for me. I just watched it last night. But what it did look exactly like to me is one of the classic circus strongman costumes, which his original costume did take its inspiration from. That's where Siegel and Shuster.
Yep.
Exactly. And I thought, brilliant. That is, like, because it was the straps, that way it looked like a weight belt with the colors of the yellow and the red. I'm like, oh, you can see the evolution of what they've been doing the montage of towards the classic costume.
I like that we're getting completely different interpretations of these montages. I'm getting Captain America, Leonardo. Yours sounds more right, but maybe it's open to interpretation. But when we get the final costume and you get the beat of the theme, like the Lois and Clark theme, and he walks in, one of my favourite scenes is just, again, this show, Lois and Clark, it shows us versions of Superman that we'd not seen in live action before. Just Superman, he walks into the room, he's still got his glasses on, and no S on his chest.
Yeah.
I love the look of just the costume, but without the S. And of course, we get it. Martha makes reference that it's not quite right, there's something missing. And she goes over to her trunk, and then Clark asks, what's that? And she pulls out this Earth-looking blanket that you could have maybe picked up at Big W Target.
Yeah.
He's like, this is the baby blanket we found you in so long ago, and it's a blue blanket. And then she pulls out an S and this, and then she attaches it to his chest, and then he's wearing the costume for the first time, and he takes off the glasses. Iconic.
It is. It really is. And even when he walks into the room for the first time in that, his body language is still a little bit unsure.
He's not quite Superman yet, that's right.
Exactly, until his mother looks, and the line, no one's going to be looking at your face. It's cheeky, and even he responds to it. But it's that kind
of borderline inappropriate for a mother to say to her son, even though he's adopted, still inappropriate.
Yeah, but it also shows the familiarity of the characters with each other as well, and where maybe some of his own cheekiness comes from.
But then you've got Pa Kent, and he says, that's my boy. And then Ma's like, well, that's right. What if somebody recognizes you? And then he just makes the whooshing sound and puts the glasses on and off a couple of times. Love it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess that'll work. And then something happens. We mentioned in the beginning, the space shuttle, there's an explosion. And Superman flies off for the first time. And then we do get a computer animator, a CGI Superman flying over the crowds.
Yeah.
And then it's, I love the line, what's that? Is it a bird? Is it a plane? I love the include of that classic line.
Yeah, and then, it's just some jerk.
Just some guy in a pair of tights and a cape. And then because he's flying so low, the rubbish, because people have been like waiting outside the shuttle launch, just flies up in the air. So they get covered in trash.
Yeah.
And then Superman goes in and he finds a way to launch the shuttle. So start to finish, I think this is a solid pilot. We get to see Superman at the end. We get to see him using his abilities before he puts on the costume. The relationships are established. And I may have said it already, but the pilot for Lois and Clark is my favourite pilot of all time.
Yeah, especially when it comes to a TV series, of a superhero TV series. Because in this day and age, you could not drag out the character development of all of the characters away from the superhero for this long. I mean, essentially, you don't get Superman or the appearance of Superman until the very end of what would have been the second episode. Whereas because they went movie length, like with Chris Evans' Captain America and spending so much of the time before he even gets the Super Soldier Serum, you understand what his character is, what his motivations are, who he is as a man. You did get the exact same thing from this pilot for Clark Kent. It is brilliant. And immediately as it finished, I wanted to go straight back in and watch the rest of the series.
Yeah, I felt the same way, but just did not have the time.
Not anymore, no, unfortunately.
Now, I did mention, so this is the third edition of Sounds Like Comics. First, we covered Legion, then Iron Fist. So I thought I'd put it out there on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and just make a point of announcing that we will be covering Lois and Clark. Just not sure, because the first two episodes were very current, and this one we're going back to 93. So 90s, would people be interested in a show like Lois and Clark, as much as we clearly are? And the answer is yes. We got questions, comments. It was, it was nice. And I've got a couple that I'd like to include in the show, and it'll kind of lead us towards talking about the finale, which I recently watched last night. I know it's a while for you.
Yep.
So maybe I can help you fill in the gaps. So this is a question from David Wellens on Instagram, and his question was around silliest storyline. It went on to say, my votes go to the transfer power from Superman to Lois, or the cryo-frozen Nazis coming back to take over Metropolis. On the other hand, I remember the multi-episode Krypton story arc being one of the better ones, not in the least because of the awesome black and blue, or black with blue, Superman suit.
Yeah.
So, silliest storyline. Just to speak to that a little bit more, if you're unfamiliar with the episode of the transferring of the powers, you had two bank robbers who use red kryptonite and a laser, or a laser beam, and they accidentally transfer the powers from Superman to Lois. This turns her into Ultra Woman, and with a little help from Mark Kent, she has her very own super suit. So yep. This is the blue and pink suit. And this episode, I agree, it is very silly, but it's also the episode. So at this point, Lois knows that Clark is Superman.
Yeah.
And he has asked her to marry him, and she's not quite ready to give an answer. But this is like spending a day in his shoes, and she realizes how hard it is to be Superman.
Yeah, almost literally a day in his shoes. And despite the silliness of the premise of Clark doesn't have his abilities anymore, but she does, it does that classic thing of showing you what makes someone a hero. And it's not just their abilities, it's the choices they make and the way they live with the responsibility. And it really hammers it home for Lois specifically. Like, oh my God, I was stopping this one thing, and then there was a cruise ship going down, and I couldn't get both, and these people died, and it's on me. And this is something he's had to deal with hundreds of times. And it's his strength of, like, it's always been like this, Lois. You can simply not save everybody. And it's that realization for her that drives their relationship forward after the fact. So I wouldn't, despite the silly premise, I always thought it was a strong episode. What's not, which is just a silly episode, was any time they brought in the prankster.
Okay, yep.
Which, I can never remember the actor's name, but for those listening, who, if you are unfamiliar, there's a series of pranks for Lois, like flowers coming with a strange greeting card, which is not romantic, and things start to go awry and affect her life negatively. It turns out that a story she wrote 5 years earlier had put a criminal in jail, and now he's out. This was his way of getting revenge. And you think, one episode, fine. But for this particular villain, they brought him back two or three more times after the fact, and they always came across rather corny.
There's a worse villain, and we'll get to him when we're speaking about the finale. For me, when the show got really silly, and I guess it was because the show was stalling as well, so we knew that Lois and Clark were going to get married, and the marriage is going to happen, but then the show is put on hold because Lois has a clone that eats frogs. The whole clone thing didn't really do it for me, and that's probably the silliest time for me. I mean, the prankster.
Yeah.
It's hard to pinpoint what was really silly because, again, it was a comedy. Like, wasn't it season one of the Jeffersons as villains? The Christmas episode where the rats was making children greedy?
No, that was season two. That was one on my list for silliest storyline, where essentially the toy maker, Mr. Shot, because he's fired and in his own, he's trying to show that everyone's greedy, so the rats are infecting people with chemicals that make them greedy, including Superman, essentially turning him into a greedy little kid, which I could never imagine Superman being a greedy little kid because of his upbringing, but it does give you some cringeworthy moments, not just of a story perspective, but also the actors having to deal with this sort of dialogue.
So that was silly.
Yeah,
agree that was silly. This is less silly, more favourite. Like, one of my favourite episodes, talking about season two, is the episode where Lois, for the first time, finds out that Clark is Superman, And that's the episode that the first episode to feature H.G. Wells and the villain Tempest.
Yes.
Who are from the future. And it's revealed to the Lois that Clark is Superman. They go back in time to Smallville, and that is a great episode. And then it ends with her no longer having that memory.
Yeah.
So they kind of like got to give the big reveal, but then hold it back until later on. I really like that.
I do, and it's something that Smallville did a number of times, and the first couple of times it worked great, but Smallville went back to that well far too many times, whereas they did it perfectly on Lois and Clark. And I just remember, it's still burned into my brain this day. I haven't seen it for a few years now, and even as I rewatched it then, I remembered it from when it originally aired, of Tempest going, "Clark Kent, no, I'm Superman," taking glasses on and off, showing how ridiculous it was.
How dumb was she?
Exactly. I can see the actor doing it right now. Yeah. And it was really harsh, but brilliantly played, because it is that thing of, for him, it's ancient history, thinking, how could anyone possibly be that stupid?
And then you have the scene where Clark slaps Lois. No, that didn't happen. No, Lois, that never happened. Lois slaps Clark and she's like, "Don't pretend that hurt, Superman."
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. And then just to wrap up this section then, when he does finally propose and then Lois asks, who's asking, Clark or Superman? And isn't that where he knows that she knows?
That's in that when moment? You finally reveal, that she has figured out, not remembered, but actually figured out that he is Clark. And it will happen like the night before or the episode before, because of something personal he did, caressing her face with his hand. And then Clark had done the same movement.
Yep.
And that's how she put the two and two together.
It's clever. I like it.
Yeah.
So as you know then, I guess Lois and Clark was unexpectedly cancelled after 4 seasons, despite the studio having promised at least 5. So it was going to happen. But due to declining viewing figures, the final season ended on a forever unresolved cliffhanger. And I've actually seen a screenshot online that originally, that last shot, it said to be continued. When it aired and on the DVD, no to be continued. They didn't use it.
Ah, interesting.
So speaking to the season 4 finale, we did get another question, this time from Jake and Tom Conquer the World podcast on Twitter. Their question, how do you think Lois and Clark would have resolved the unresolved cliffhanger that ended season 4? Now, I think you might have some ideas on maybe what they could have done. If you're unfamiliar, before you do that, the series ends with someone unseen and unknown who seems to know Clark's secret identity, leaving a baby in the bassinet in the living room with a Superman emblem as a blanket over the child and a note saying that the child belongs to them.
Yes, that part I remember very clearly. I can't remember the majority of the episode. I'm half remembering that there was some big villain, is something really hard for them to conquer, someone with almost magical, godlike abilities.
I'm glad you brought him up. That you're talking about Fathead. He's literally a guy with a fat head, so he's got like a really far back, receding hairline with a big prosthetic head. He'd been in prison the whole time Superman had made his appearance, and he'd been, saving people in Metropolis. So this is somebody that Superman had never gone up against before, and he had like the power of the mind, like telekinesis. He can move things with his mind. His name was Fathead, so he didn't have anything to do with the baby turning up. We didn't really get any clues. I did read somewhere that the baby was to be revealed as Kryptonian royalty, hidden on Earth by his mother to protect him. It is a very weird ending. It's like they find out in this episode that Kryptonian and Earth biology just don't go. So they, or human biology, not
Earth. Yeah, which
they
is,
won't
and
be
that's
able to have children.
Thing that they're dealing with towards the end of the episode, that despite how much they love each other and the fact that they both really want to have children, that's never going to happen between the two of them. And then it's like, it is like a prayer answered when they find the baby at the end.
And in that moment, both their parents are staying over and they get woken up during the night and Lois and Clark are holding a baby and they're like, look, mom, dad, I think is the line that Clark uses. We've got a baby now. And that's it. That's where it ends.
Yeah.
It's very unsatisfying. I've got to say, and it's not the show's fault. What is their fault? The finale is not good. The season finale the season four finale is not a good episode.
No, and it's also very typical of a show that was expecting renewal, expecting another season to resolve a cliffhanger that never got that final episode or that final few episodes to investigate what they had just set up, which is become really commonplace these days. Terra Nova's finale a few years back, and
well, there's been a few where
quite a few where they set up a finale expecting that would help push the viewership, only for them to never ever get to resolve whatever cliffhanger they had set up. For this one specifically, if I were to resolve it now, I would use the Geoff Johns, Richard Donner storyline, Last Son, where the baby turns out to be General Zod's child that he's had with Ursa in the Phantom Zone.
There's literally nothing I can say that's going to be better than that. That is great. And it's almost like, now I'm hearing you say that, it's as if that's what it is.
Yeah. Because it's Kryptonian baby, royal bloodline.
Christopher Zod, Chris Zod.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And he raises it as his own.
And then Zod comes back.
And that would have been your great season five villain.
And they'd never used Zod. We'd seen, what is it, Lord Nar or Lord Baal, where the Kryptonians had imprisoned Smallville.
Yep. That's what I do now, but that hadn't been thought of at the time.
But that would have been a great season five.
Yeah.
Turning up the action.
Yeah.
You know, we've both talked about how much we enjoy the comedy, but turning up the action and have the baby be, you know, this, they were saying Kryptonian royalty, but the son of Zod and Ursa. And who's to say in this interpretation of Superman, they aren't royalty.
Exactly.
Wow. What a bombshell.
Yeah.
What a way to end the show. Well, thanks for today, Jay. I've been wanting to talk about Lois and Clark for almost an hour for a long time now, and finally got to do it today. So if you enjoyed this episode where we're not necessarily talking about something current, but we're going back, like we touched on the John Wesley Shipp Flash TV series from the 90s, maybe there's something else that you'd like us to cover an episode on, you can contact us on Facebook, Sounds Like Comics Podcast, or Comic Zone. Thanks again for listening. I've been Luke.
I've been Jay.
See you next time. Go to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.